All right, these two guys stand on the street corner and they watch Shlomo running by. Said, would you look at that? Shlomo out jogging on the Sabbath day. He's breaking the Sabbath. Can you believe it? The other guy says, well, we got to give him some kind of credit here. We don't know exactly what's going on in Shlomo's life. What would be going on in Shlomo's life that he'd be out jogging on the Sabbath? Well, maybe he's got like a sick family member he's going to go take care of. Well, if he has a sick family member, he's a doctor. He can take care of him at home. Well, okay, well, I guess since he's a doctor, maybe he's running off to the hospital. Look, the hospital's over that way. He's going that way. We know he's not running to the hospital. Well, maybe Shlomo doesn't know that it's the Sabbath day. He's like, look, Shlomo was wearing a tie. We know he only wears a tie on the Sabbath day, so therefore we know he knew it was the Sabbath day. Well, that's pretty observant of you. I didn't notice that he was actually wearing a tie. He says, how could you miss it? It was caught in the door of that taxi cab. There are issues all the time with bringing Torah into the workplace. We all have certain things that we need to do. I'm not here to tell you what to believe. I'm not here to tell you how to carry it out. I do want you to know what you believe, because when you start going to your boss and saying, hey, I need off on Saturday, or hey, there's this holiday coming up, or I don't really give a hoot about Christmas, can I come in on Christmas? That's fine. That's your own business. But in that respect, I want you to know exactly what it is that you believe so that you can bring it to your boss. And this will give you some things that you've got to do to set yourself up to do that. Oh, thanks, Dane. I just got one, though. It's my son, Dane. Yay, Dane. Did you run back to the camp for that?
Well, yeah, I hitched a ride.
Oh, okay. Well, thanks. All right, so, yes, I have an agenda today. We will make an agenda. Introductions, purpose of the class, who's in the class for, and who's it not for. Because some of you, I'm sure, really aren't supposed to be here. But we have to be ready for that. You've got to go through your position, prepare your case, present your case, and of course follow up. And then it's not going to be over then. Think about yourself. 10 years ago, how far along were you in the faith? And compared to where you are now. Give yourself another 10 years and think you'll probably be that far along again, and there may be other changes. Or maybe you'll learn that this whole thing's just hooey and you're going to throw it all out by then. Either way, you've got to be able to grow in your faith, and of course we're going to have time for questions. This is me. I am a captain of the United States Army. I teach nuclear physics at the Chemical School at Fort Leonard Wood. I'm the chief of the Edwin R. Bradley Radiological Laboratories there at Fort Leonard Wood, so I'm in charge of all of their research and everything else they do with radiation. I have had experience in industrial jobs, in medical jobs, retail, government jobs. I can't say that all of them happened at the time that I was in the Torah lifestyle, but I have worked within the framework of all of that. And, of course, 1999, I started moving into the Messianic lifestyle. So before then, yes, I had a lot of experience that had nothing to do with the Messianic lifestyle. I was a Southern Baptist and very pleased and happy with my Southern Baptistism. And bit by bit, I've been growing in my faith in the Messianic community. And so I have 9 children as well. Wow. And so, anyway, purpose of class, bring glory to Jehovah. In all things, especially in our work, because your work is one of the most important parts of what you do. It actually, for men, most of the time, it defines what you are. You say, what are you? You say, I'm the husband of a wife, or I'm a father of children. Typically, we say, no, I'm a nuclear physicist, or I'm a construction worker, or I'm a whatever you are. You know, I'm a soldier, I'm a carpenter or something. And you usually define yourself by that. So you have to be able to bring glory to Jehovah in that. You want to establish a Torah-consistent lifestyle. You don't want there to be contradictions in what you believe and how you believe it. Sometimes that's difficult. There's a lot of halakha in all of that. Halakha is the way you walk out your faith. So you want to bring a higher satisfaction in the own job that you have. What you're doing when you go to work, you want to be happy about your job. That's most important. Bosses like that. A boss really wants happy, happy employees. Because if his employees are happy, they work well. And oh, by the way, you don't have to pay happy employees as much as you have to pay sad employees. Seriously. And of course, you want to be a witness to your coworkers. There's going to be a lot of situations where they say, well, you're not making sacrifices. Well, you're not. And they'll be throwing things at you. If you are happy about what you do, especially your own job, if you're happy about the way you work with people, other folks will want to have something to do with this. They're going, you know, he's thrilled. He's not saying it's a drag to be in Torah. He's not saying the law is a burden. He says this is fun. He's having a great time. Look, he's got 8 days of Hanukkah. He's got 8 days of Sukkot. He's got a holiday every week. My goodness, this guy's really having a good old time. So, and of course, you want to get your coworkers and employers to purify and strengthen your faith. Here's kind of my thought on it. Imagine your boss coming up to you. You know, I've been noticing you keep all these Jewish holidays. I pulled out my calendar the other day, and I saw that it was Tubi Shavat. Do you need off for Tubi Shavat? And you'll go, no, I don't think so. And then you get the opportunity to explain Tubi Shavat so that people will actually understand what you're talking about. And that's kind of the goal. If he's looking out for you as you're looking out for him, then the two of you are working together to build your own faith. Because it could be, I said Tubi Shavat, and I'm sure some of you in the classroom are going, Tubi Shavat? That's, I don't want it to be anything. What is that? I've never heard of that. So, do you need to take off that day? Well, I'll have to let you decide. It's not up to me, but most people don't, okay? So, class is for people who work for somebody else. If you work for yourself, I mean, yes, I'm not going to deny that you have a boss. Everybody has a boss. If you work for yourself, or you're the supervisor, you still have a boss, which might be your customers, it might be the people you work with, whatever. But everybody's got a boss. But if you work for somebody else in some way, shape, or form, this class is for you. Or there could be someone else's. It could be like all your customers, or it could be all your bosses. There could be a lot of people out there. I've got lots of bosses because I'm in the military. So that is everybody. People who wish to keep their jobs. And if you wish to lose your job, forget it. Class is not really for you. People wish to obey the scriptures. Okay, now some folks out there think that that's them. Everybody thinks, I want to obey the Bible. I want to do what the Bible says. Yes. No, not everybody wants to do what the Bible says. Because you come up to them and you say, hey, have you noticed the Bible says this? And they'll go, yeah, but that's done away with. That's in the Newer Testament. Well, is it red? No. Okay, I'm only going to obey the red. Okay, well, it says in the red this. Well, no, I don't want to do that either. So, everybody thinks it's them. It's not. But let's face it. All of us have grace on us for those points at which we fall short. And so we've got to grant grace to them. All of us have learned over the years and over time how to get ourselves into the point where we are now. And we can look back and say, boy, was I ever wrong back then. Nobody's going to be going into the kingdom going, I'm glad God set all of them straight. No, it's not going to be that way. It's going to be, oh, why didn't I see all those other things I could have been doing for every single one of us? And so they will be saying it. And believe it or not, they probably have some things that they could teach you. Just as you have things to teach them. A sign of maturity in your spiritual walk is that you've realized that you can learn something from anybody. So, okay, if you hear a higher calling, now, and you're willing to obey it. Because, I mean, everybody hears a higher calling. I really believe there are many who are called, but very few that are chosen to actually go after what it is that they believe. So, if you're willing to obey the higher calling that you hear when somebody comes to you and says, hey, let's say this in the scripture, and you might go, God, I haven't been doing that. I don't know. I remember back in, I guess it was 2003, I went to a Sunday church, and then, of course, we'd keep Shabbat at our house because, well, it just wasn't a synagogue around that fit our family. So we went to a Sunday church, and we kept Shabbat on Saturday, and then after church on Sunday, we would get up and we'd mow our grass and do all that kind of stuff. The pastor found out, what he did is he put out a all-points bulletin. Everybody's got to come in and help us to clean up the grounds, trim the bushes, and cut the grass around the building. And they said that we'll do this on Saturday. And I'm sorry, I keep the Sabbath, so I'm not going to do it. You keep the Sabbath? Well, yes, the Sabbath. And I mean, well, the Sabbath is Sunday. It's been changed to Sunday. Who said that? Well, it Jesus took away with it. Obviously, he broke the Sabbath. So he goes to this big, long, he gives me all these sermons that he taught years ago on how the Sabbath is done away with and how the church is new and we've changed all the rules and everything like that. And as I listened to him, his arguments were so weak that it actually convinced me that, well, maybe I should eat kosher because his arguments really stink. I really didn't realize. Maybe I should give up Christmas. I never thought about that. You know, And he's like, don't you see, if you start keeping the Sabbath, you're going to have to give up Christmas and start celebrating Hanukkah? Well, maybe I will. That's a good idea. But then you'll stop eating ham and bacon and things. Yeah, you're right. Maybe I ought to do that. And, you know, that he was a very major person to push me more into the messianic lifestyle. So, okay, class is not for. If you are any of these people, I'm not going to tell you need to necessarily get up, because you might actually be entertained, even if you're not going to be benefiting from this. So, it is not for marginal quality workers. If you're somebody who wants to put in one day's work for one day's pay, this class isn't for you. You need to put in more than a day's work each day. Don't look around you at what the other people are doing and saying, I know I can do this much, you do that much. If you want to just scrape by, hey, the boss only told me to do this, sorry, the class isn't for you. You need to look at your job and say, the boss told me to do this, let me also do this over here. Or, the boss told me to do this, let me do this so well that the other guy doesn't have to do it next time. It's not for John D. Rockefeller. Now, I know a lot of you are thinking, well, that's because he's a rich guy. No. And that's partly true. I mean, if you're wealthy enough to where you could push people around and say, I'm going to take my Sabbath now, go away! Okay, fine, that's your business. But really, I put John D. Rockefeller because there's a quote from him. He was a very wealthy man, just making money all the time. Somebody came to him and said, well, how much money do you need to make? And his answer was, just a little more. If your thought is, I just need a little more money, this class isn't for you. Because you have to either be satisfied with the money, or you have to be satisfied with the job. You can't be satisfied with both. If you have a job that you're working for money, you're always going to hate your job. If you think of any other reason to be working, you're going to love your job, or you're going to change your job to something you love. But if you're working for money, it'll never be enough money. So think of something else that you could be working for, and one of those things might be that your boss is very beneficial and very supportive of your religious activities. That would be a great reason to be working here. If you are a Hooters waitress or a drug dealer, this class is not for you. And what I really mean here is this class is not for people whose jobs are bent on that which is immoral or illegal. If your job is all wrapped around something and you've got to be showing off a bunch of skin or you've got to be breaking the law, don't go to your boss and say, hey, you know, since we have to be breaking the law here, can I take off on the Sabbath? That's silly. Don't do it. This class is not for the last correct worshiper in the world. You know this person. He is the guy who goes to any church and go, I can't go to that church because they don't keep the Sabbath. I can't go to that church because they number their holidays coming from the new moon rather than from the first conjunction moon. And I can't go to that church over there because they speak and say the word Yahweh rather than Jehovah. I can't. These guys say God. And if you can't find somebody else that agrees with you and you can't gather with other people, I'm sorry. This class isn't for you. Now you can sit out there and you can laugh at me now or you can leave. It's your choice. This class is not for the Lone Ranger. If you pop open your Bible and you read through it and you find some doctrine and I'm doing that. That's it. I'm not even talking to anybody else. This class isn't for you. If you are someone who reads open your Bible and it says something and you go, wow, I think I need to do that. Let me go see what this pastor says. Let's go see what this rabbi says. Let's go see and start looking it up and researching it from other sources. Then yes, you're welcome here. But if you're going to be one who makes up your entire faith in a vacuum and you can't say that there's anybody in the world that looks or acts like you, sorry, that's the Lone Ranger. And also, by the way, you're going to eventually become the last correct worshiper in the world. So, Lunar Sabbatarians. I love you. I can see where you're coming from. I can understand what you're saying. Here's the problem. If you're going to work in modern society, now Lunar Sabbatarians, typically they say the first of the month, whichever they want to count it as the first new moon, or whether it be the first conjunction, or the dark moon, or whatever, they say that's the Sabbath day. And so 7 days after that's another Sabbath day. And the 7 days after that is another Sabbath. The problem is, there will come a time that in 1 7-day period you'll have 2 Sabbath days. And then you start doing... So this week, or this month, yeah, you have a Saturday Sabbath just because it started on a Friday night, and so Saturday is your Sabbath. Next month you're going to have a Tuesday Sabbath. The following month you're going to have a Thursday Sabbath. The following month you're going to have a Sunday Sabbath. You can't do that to a boss. You can't say, I'm changing every month. All contracts, all things that have to do with an employer, have to do with a function of time. If you can't get along with your boss in terms of time to say, forever and always, I need off this day, and you can like show him somebody else that shows how this day works out, and he can like look it up at any given time, you know, pull up his calendar, and they've got the Jewish holidays on the calendar, and he knows here's where Passover is, and here's where Tu B'Shavat is, and here's where everything else is that you're going to be making significant in your life. And he knows where all of these things are. Now he can work with you. But if you are someone who changes every month, I can't work with you. Class is not for you. Short-term employees. If you're planning on quitting your job soon, just bite the bullet and quit your job. I mean, just hang on until you got to be gone, and then when you go apply for another job, sit in front of this prospective employer and say, okay, great, but I need off Saturday. I take Jewish holidays. If I need to take it on my vacation time, that's my business, but I mean, I have to do this. I'm not going to be doing it like everybody else. If you're about to quit, no, the class really isn't for you. And of course, unemployed people. If you don't have a job right now, you need to just go to your prospective employer and try to work out what you're going to do before you go to work there. Don't try to apply for a job and say, hey, all of a sudden, you know, now I really have to take off Sabbath. Hey, wait, this is Chick-fil-A, you know, we're closed on Sunday. And no, that's not the way it works. So, first thing you've got to do is you have to assess what your position is. How do you work? What do you believe? What it is that you accomplish within your life. Socrates said an unexamined life is not worth living. If you don't know what you believe, I'm sorry, we can't really work with you too well. Okay, people don't like Socrates because he was a Greek pagan philosopher. So how about Paul? Then, my beloved, just as you've always obeyed, not only my presence only, but now much more in my absence, work out your salvation with fear and trembling, for it is God who is at work in you, both to will and to work his good pleasure. You need to get through and figure out exactly what it is you believe. So, before you start, how do you figure out what it is that you truly believe? It's going to take some time. Don't think that you're going to just be able to sit down, these are all the things I believe, and that's the end of it. And when I say it takes some time, we're not talking 10 minutes. Maybe about 2 weeks. If it takes less than 2 weeks, I really wonder. I would expect probably about 2 months. There's a whole lot going on with this. So consider, the longer you really sit down and say, what do I really believe, the better it is. And if you've got things, you know, they made up the Apostles' Creed so that they could try to boil down what folks actually believe to make it, this is what's really important and this is what's not really important. So, things are still going to change, so know that. And know that, hey, I may not have it straight yet, but we'll get there. Some people, in the meantime, may trample your conscience. Paul said, why not rather be wrong, to the book of 1 Corinthians. If you could possibly have your conscience trampled, you can forgive. You can grant grace. Because, oh, by the way, did I mention you guys got grace already? So, be ready for it. So, God's grace is sufficient for them and for you. Both of you have God's grace on you in the event that you have to get your conscience trampled. So here, think about the kind of things that you really believe. Sabbath day. Let me promise you this. There are things that you do at work that you would not consider work. I'm not going to tell you that the geographical location of your place of employment means that you're working, but I would suggest that perhaps there are times that you can show up at work and be doing something that your boss still needs you to do that you would not consider work. Like, for instance, there have been times in the military, they have to have somebody at the staff duty desk. This person sits and he answers the telephone when it rings and he transfers the phone call. I don't think that's work in my life. You know, I sit at home. If you were to call me, I'll still pick up the phone and I still hand the phone to my wife. So, you have a question? No, okay. So, think about that. there's a lot that goes on with the Sabbath day. You've got to define what you mean by work. Is it creative activity? That's what some of the rabbis say. Anything that's, because that's what Yahweh did on, he created stuff. So anything you're creating, that would be creative activity. Okay, that would be work. Some folks take the list of 39 things that you can't do on the Sabbath, and they don't do those things. And oh, by the way, you can still show up at your office and sit in a chair and not do those 39 things. In a lot of situations. So figure out what you're going to call the Sabbath, what is important to do or not do on the Sabbath, and get that together. Holidays, of course, are important. Which holidays are important? If you go to Israel, Hanukkah is not a holiday. It's a commemoration. Nobody takes off work anywhere in Israel for Hanukkah. That's just silly. Maybe you want to. I don't know. You know, I'll leave it up to you how you want to do this. Decide which holidays you really need off and which holidays you don't. And then think of all the holidays that your co-workers, Christmases and Easters and stuff like that, that they want off, and you might be able to work with them. They may come in and say, I can't work on Sunday. And you go, hey, Sunday's fine for me. Can you take Saturday for me? Now the whole world is working together. Two of you go to the boss and say, hey, she has to work Saturday, I have to work, or she has to work Sunday, I have to work Saturday. Can we swap because I really hate working Saturday and she really hates working Sunday. She wants to go to church. Yeah, in some ways that's almost kind of condemning them in the fact that, yes, you have your righteousness and she has her righteousness and the two of you will work together. Perhaps you'll learn from each other in that you've granted grace to each of them to be where they are until they learn, right? Food. Sometimes they come into the office and they bring, you know, a bunch of bacon or they bring a bunch of filet mignons or something like that. I remember several years they had Christmases and they handed out hams to everybody in the office. Ooh, thank you very much. And if they do, there are actually people, if you want to read the Torah, that are allowed to eat ham. But you got to figure out exactly what you're going to do about that and how you really feel about the workplace food. Do you want to always get this circle K on for kosher of all your stuff, circle U, you know, OU, on your food? If that's the case, you may not be able to eat with them. It may be that you don't get to go to the restaurants with them or something like that. You need to work that out. There is some stuff there. Davening. Some of you don't even know what davening is. That's okay. Davening is the prayer that you do during the day. If your co-workers are Muslim, let me guarantee you, they daven. They do their prayer five times a day. They should allow you to do the same. The problem is, now, do you have to do it at a certain time? Do you have to do it in a certain outfit? Do you have to do it in a certain location? Do you have to face a certain direction? Do you have to get out of everybody's way? Do you have to walk into a closet? Do you have to stand in the corner and put your face in there? Whatever you're going to do for praying, consider it. For those of you who haven't considered it, you might need to. Extra employment activities. There's a lot of times there are things that your employer says, everybody in this office is going to go do this on Saturday. Well, is that acceptable? What are they doing? Could it be that they're... I remember I used to work at a radio station years and years and years ago. Can you imagine that with a voice like mine? Everybody says I've got the face for radio. I used to work at a radio station. And we would go to what would they call remote sites, which means we pull up our truck and we would park there next to some business or something like that, and we'd broadcast from the business. Well, I can talk on the Sabbath, right? I'm not setting up the mics. I'm not setting up the podium or anything like that. But we'd still broadcast what we had to go on that day. So I'd say, okay, engineer, come on out, set the stuff up. I'm not setting it up today. I'll set it up on Tuesday or Friday or whatever, but I won't do it today. And he sets it all up for me, and then I come out there and I broadcast straight from there because I can talk about a place on the Sabbath day. That's fine for my convictions. It may not be for yours. I talk all the time. I'm not going to talk at all on the Sabbath. Just completely silent. Can't imagine my ever doing that. Conversations. This is important. What are you going to say to people? How are you going to talk with folks at the work? It could be that somebody uses foul language. It could be somebody says God. It could be somebody says Lord. It could be somebody, whatever. You've got to figure out what you believe about the conversations. Do you need to correct them? Could it be that you only correct yourself and then let everybody else figure out and ask, hey, how come you never say Jesus? I don't understand that. It could be you want to do that. I would highly suggest that. That seems to be a very reasonable approach to all of this. Clothing. I'm in the military. I have to wear a military uniform. Tzitzit are not allowed in the U.S. military uniform. Oddly enough, a kippah is allowed in the U.S. military uniform. I can go around with a kippah on, but I cannot go around with tzitzit. And nowhere in the Bible does it say that I need to wear a kippah, but it does say I need to wear tzitzit. Well, I have gotten in trouble a few times. But the fortunate thing is, I've been in the military a really long time, so now I'm like high ranking, so when they come in and they say, Captain Kapler, why is it you're wearing those blue things coming off your garment? And I go, well, because Numbers chapter 13, verse 4 says that you should have a cord of blue in the fringes on the four corners of your garment. The guy who's from legal in our unit, he is so angry, he just so much wants the commander to come, you know, put a letter of reprimand and bar me from anything. Commander's like, I'm not messing with this. I am not going to go fight this one out because there's probably too many Jews out there to mess with this guy. So they leave me alone. I don't make travel. Can you travel on the Sabbath day if you're not driving? Or if you are driving, if you're flying, can you be away from home on certain times? Just this last Passover, I was actually up in Detroit, Michigan. I went to a Passover Seder up there. I was working through the day, and then all of a sudden I say, hey guys, Passover Seder comes in 1 hour, I'm leaving by. And they're like, but you're, okay, I guess we'll shut everything down now. And I went to a Passover Seder there in Detroit. Then when I came back home, I did another Seder with my family 1 month later. So you've got to decide what travel you can do. Can you do all the travel? Are there places you can't go? I don't know. Smoking? Is it a problem for people to smoke in the office around you? Your business? I don't care. Drinking? Sometimes they say that you've got to take the client out. You've got to schmooze them with a little alcohol. If you feel that's against your ethics, go right ahead or not. Gambling, there are office pools where you do like a football pool or, you know, everybody's throwing their money together so that they can buy lottery tickets or something like that. Decide what you need to know about that. Foul language. Are they going to say cuss words and you're going to get it out? Don't use words like that. Don't take my deity's name in vain. So, sexual issues. We're in the modern 21st century and a lot of people say, well, is this any big deal? Some guys should not be working with women. And oh, by the way, if you're traveling, some guys may not be able to travel with women. Probably not a good idea. Think about it. Could very well be that I was working at a hospital at Fort Worth, Texas. When I first got there, I had a very godly boss, great staff that we worked with. We got along great. I swapped out all the Saturdays for Sundays so that I could get my Sabbath off. He had let me off every Friday evening at a certain time. But later on, he got replaced with another woman who was a lesbian. And then she started bringing in her friends and pretty soon, the whole department was full of homosexuals, and I couldn't work with them anymore. Because prior, I would like call up all the guys from the work saying, hey, we're going to have a barbecue at my house this Sunday. You want to come on by? Bring your wife. Bring your kids. I couldn't say bring your significant other, so I said, I can't work with these people. So sexual issues might be a problem, and you have to know what you believe on there. So here's a major question you've got to ask. Why do you have a job? If you say it's for money, oh, sad, sad, sad. If you're working for money, you're going to hate your job because there's never enough money. Keep in mind, here's what money is. I'll define money for you. It is the placeholder between labor and products. Because when I'm teaching nuclear physics, the guy at the grocery store doesn't care that I teach nuclear physics. He doesn't want to learn nuclear physics. He has nothing to do with nuclear physics. But I get paid by my boss to bring to the guy at the grocery store, here's money. And the guy at the grocery store says, well, I just noticed I've got way too many groceries, but I've got way too little money. And I would say, look, I've got more money, but I need more groceries. And so we swap it out and we trade. I give you the money, you give me the groceries. And fine, could it be that your boss could pay you groceries? It just might be a good idea in some situations. So if you're working for money, could it be your wayward tendencies? Could it be that there's something that goes on in your job that you say, well, you know, I get to chase the ladies, or I get to drink a whole lot on certain days or something like that, or in the middle of the day. Some people work for that. I'm not saying who that is. I don't know who that is, but think about it. If that's the reason why you like this job is because it allows you to steal, to drink, to chase women or whatever, it's not going to help you to go to this class. Could it be that you just love the job you do? I hope so. You need to seek a job that you enjoy. If you don't enjoy your job, really think about what you're doing. Because there's got to be something out there that you like doing. It could be that you just choose to like your job. Some people do that. You could like the benefits, that the time you work or the hours you work or the boss you work for. I had a great job when I was in Tyler, Texas, working for a geoscience soils analysis lab. They didn't pay worth anything. They tested dirt, and I got paid dirt. But I love the people I work with. I love the stuff that I was doing. It's just I wasn't paid very much, and so I chased money to leave there. Well, going back now with a family of nine, you know, I can't really do that too well. But could it be that you have a call to duty? A lot of people in the military, a lot of folks, you know, EMS folks, they feel that there is a need in their community for what it is that they're doing. Could it be that they have the right hours, that they come in at the right time and leave at the right time, and hey, I get to have off the afternoons or I get to have off the mornings or whatever. Some people just like that. Could it be that you like to travel? Because just a lot of people like to travel around. So could it be that you like other perks? There could be other perks on your job that you just like. Any of that kind of stuff, any of those reasons besides the first two, I would highly support to say these are reasons why you need to work. If you're working for the first two reasons, you need to reassess what you're doing and what you believe and why you work. Because otherwise, you're just going to always hate your job. So how's your pay determined? Everybody thinks that they need more money, right? Now, I'm a soldier in the United States military. A lot of people say, well, you just don't pay those soldiers enough. It does tell me in the Bible that I'm not supposed to complain about my pay. Specifically, it says, soldiers, be content with your pay and don't defraud anybody. That's what John the Baptist said. So I'm told to do this. So how is your pay determined? Let's imagine that you have like a basketball team. And you could possibly put on your basketball team basically something in return for the labor. You have to look at that. Kobe Bryant. If you put Kobe Bryant on the basketball court, you are probably going to pull in $20 million a year on your basketball team just for putting him on your team. Or you could put me on the basketball court and you'll probably pull $65, $70 a year. Now, would you want to pay me $10 million to play basketball for you when I'm only going to pull in $70 worth of return? No, nobody's going to want me to be out there playing basketball for $70 and pay me $10 million. When Kobe Bryant pulls in $20 million, are you okay with him making $10 million? That only makes sense. And if you don't give him the $10 million, somebody else will give him the $10 million because somebody else will realize they can make $20 million. And I'm happy to pay somebody $10 million if they're making me $20 million. Right? Okay. The price of someone else, this is the second way that it's determined. The price of somebody else doing the same job reasonably well. If somebody else can come in and do this job that you do marginally well, I mean, we don't need to be exceptional, really, then perhaps we could hire them at a lower wage. Now, do you work as much as two people? If they lost you, do they have to hire two people to replace you? Then you might expect a little more money. Do you have other benefits of you being around? Like, for instance, you're happy. If you're a happy employee, you're doing your job well, and they love that, and you're making the other employees happy too. There's another good reason to keep you around. So, in that regard, don't think that your boss must pay you more. Think, what am I returning to this company? Am I making money for my boss? And of course, there is the cost of hiring someone else. It is difficult. It is expensive. It is hard to get somebody into a job. So when you have somebody fired, you have to hire someone else. They're not working for you. You're not making any money. Watch out. Now you've got to find somebody else to come in. You don't know what this person's like. This person may be a deadbeat. He may sour the mood of everybody else around him. It's a dangerous thing. Better the devil you know than the devil you don't know is what your boss would probably think. And I'm not firing you because, well, who knows what I'm going to get if you're gone. I'm at least getting marginal quality work out of you. Watching my time here. Oh, still doing good. Okay. So, how's your pay determined? Of course, it's the return for your labor. You get paid based on how much you make for your boss. The price of doing someone else doing the same job reasonably well. The cost of hiring someone else. And then the expense of accommodating you. I put this picture up. This is at Fort Leonard Wood, Missouri, a basic training battalion. You can see this is the drill sergeant. He's the guy that's in charge of all of these folks. These are the basic trainees that are just now graduating. And here's this funny looking guy here. Do you see what's different about him?
He has a cape on.
He has a turban on and a beard. He's a Sikh. Yes, the United States Army has just changed its regulations to allow Sikhs to have beards and turbans and to carry their knife, because a Sikh has to have this. Now, up until just last summer, basically, they weren't allowed to join the military, but there was a orthopedic surgeon Sikh that wanted to join the Army, and he said, well, I've got to join the Army, but I would like to have my turban, and I would like to have a beard, and I would like to have a knife. And they said, I'm sorry, we can't let you have that. He said, well, then you lost an orthopedic surgeon. And went, quick, change the regulations, we've got to get this orthopedic surgeon in here. And so they changed the regulations. If you are a Sikh, you can have a beard and a turban. If you are a Christian, a Muslim, or a Jew, you cannot have a beard. But if you're a Sikh, you can have a beard. Yes?
About the knife? Never heard about the knife.
They haven't. Sikhs always must carry a knife with them. It's to cut the sin out of their life, is what they say. So yes, they always have to have a knife.
Okay.
So now they do wear the knife underneath their shirt, kind of, but they don't. They have to have it all the time. So kind of like the Mormon underwear.
Is that symbolic, the cutting the sin out of their life?
Yeah, I don't think there's any literal cutting of sin. I don't know. I've never. I hope they don't. Yeah. Sorry, I can't. Yes, sir.
You think that should have been allowed?
Not my place to make any comment on what is. Wait until September of 2015 when I'm retired from the military, and I'll make comment on what should be allowed in the United States military and what shouldn't. Okay. But for now, I'm a high-ranking officer, and if I make some proclamation, this becomes part of Army policy, and I can't say that. So what I will say for now is that's the rule. If you are a Sikh, you can have a beard. If you are a Christian or a Jew or a Muslim, you cannot have a beard. Okay, so assessing your position. Ask why they hired you. They didn't do it for friendship. They didn't do it for love. They didn't do it for charity. They didn't do it because it was just fun to have you around. No, they did it for money. They wanted to make money. And it may not be just making more money. It could be just to save the money that they already make, because it got a little expensive not having an accountant here. We keep misbalancing our books and then we get fines from the IRS or whatever. And they may have hired you for that reason. Or they keep dropping their tanks, so they got somebody else here to hold their welding tanks up or something like that. And they hired you just basically because they're trying to cut the expenses of what is already going on here. So if it's to reduce expenses, obviously the money that they were losing is actually the money you can be expected to be making. So ask this. This is, what are your advantages in terms of, hey, I got to negotiate with my boss. Title 7 of the Civil Rights Act of 1964 actually says that one of the protected provisions is religion. If you, as your freedom of religion, can stand on Title 7 and say, I should be allowed reasonable accommodations for my religious activities. Second thing, if you really can't get any kind of defense in terms of it, there is the Adventist Defense League. This is a group from the Seventh-day Adventists. These guys are actually able to, and they like to take cases that have to do with Sabbath days, and say, well, these people should be allowed to keep the Sabbath day on Saturday. And they do a lot of court cases, and they typically win because they've got the entire Seventh-day Adventist church behind them. I would suggest that you never, ever use these two things. What you're doing there is you're making your boss your enemy, and then your boss will make you his enemy, and you will be hated by both your coworkers and your boss, and you will never get what you're really wanting.
But you can get advice from them. I mean, that might help.
Well, I mean, if you want to look at the Civil Rights Act, okay, advice, no, don't waste your time with that. You could call them on that, but be careful, because they're pretty eager to grab a court case, because that's how they make their money, is court cases. Yes, sir?
Yes, sir. We had a couple of guys like that. They wanted out because they wanted to be Jehovah's Witnesses.
Mm-hmm.
Pretty much. Well, they ended up getting general discharge.
Yeah. Yes, Tim.
As an employer, I totally support what you're saying, because employees that start trying to pull the law on you, it's because they can't do it because they're good employees.
Absolutely.
They can't win their case based on their their performance on the job.
Excellent.
The law.
You are leading right in my next point. That is the quality of your work. If you are the best employee around, if you are the person that's getting everybody else excited about doing their job, if it's fun to work with you, or you get the job done better than anybody else, or you get it done faster than anybody else, or you are more eager to find what it is your boss wants, or you see what your boss wants before your boss even sees it, that's your biggest advantage here. You are going to be the one that's held onto, and they will jump through all kinds of rings of fire to see to it you are happy on the job, because they don't want to lose you. Yes, sir?
We just gave a great example, even an orthopedic surgeon, one guy.
One guy, yeah. They were so eager to get an orthopedic surgeon in the United States Army, they changed the entire regulations of the United States Army for one religion, one man. And so now there's probably, I think there's a half a dozen Sikhs in the United States Army. That's about all. There's not very many of them. I mean, there's even more Pastafarians. Have you heard those? No, Pastafarians. They're the ones who wear the spaghetti strainers on their heads. And I'm serious. Look it up. This is a real religion. And oh, by the way, the United States Army has a Pastafarian chaplain. Seriously. They're the ones who founded the Talk Like a Pirate Day. It's a religion, honestly. They believe the giant spaghetti monster is going to be coming back. Never mind, not getting off on that. Okay. Second advantage you have is you are profitable for your company. If you are dragging in more... Kobe Bryant, if he says, I want on Saturday, no question whatsoever. You look back, Lenny Koufax played for the New York Yankees. Excellent pitcher. Sandy Koufax played for the Yankees. Excellent pitcher. Did a great job. Probably would have been quicker in the Hall of Fame than anybody else, but he wouldn't play on Saturday. And people were like, it's just baseball. All you're doing is playing a game. Uh-uh. My job is baseball. I'm not going to play on Saturday. And so he didn't get all the no-hitters and all the pitching benefits that he would have gotten had he played on Saturday. But he was committed to his religion. Yes, sir?
During the World Series, he didn't pitch on the Yonkers Court.
Exactly.
It cost him the series.
It could very well have cost him the series, yes. So if you're profitable for the company, if you're doing well, I would think in most situations a lot of baseball teams would say, let's get rid of Sandy Koufax. But he was so good, they couldn't lose him. Even though he was so hard to accommodate, wouldn't play on Yom Kippur, wouldn't play on the Sabbath. Very dedicated Jew. You encourage honor and teamwork. This is important. If you are one who's sitting around going, well, let's just kind of pencil whip this and put the numbers down or make up fake paperwork or something like that. If you're the one in there that's doing that sort of thing or dividing folks, saying, oh, we need those folks to be over there and those folks over there. If you're the one who can't bring folks together, we really shouldn't have you around anyway. But if you're the one who's bringing them all together to say, hey, this is the job we need to get done. This is what needs to happen. That's the kind of person you want around. That's one of your biggest advantages. Happy workers, if you're a happy worker, that's the kind of workers every boss wants to have around. So you got the advantage there. And of course, last and probably least of all of those is that you're already hired. Firing you and hiring someone else is a real pain. And once they fire you, then they've got to pay the higher premiums for their unemployment insurance and stuff like that. Okay, I can put up with you just a little bit just because I can't fire you and it's so hard to get somebody else to work here. So prepare with a meeting of the boss. You got to get with your boss. You got to talk with him one-on-one. So put in 2 good months at least of really, really, really good work. Let your boss be amazed at how high quality work is, and you're catching every little thing, and you're keeping the office clean, and the folks are coming together, and this is the kind of person he wanted to hire all the way. Do what you're told better than anybody else, and look for what will be an issue for your boss in the future, so that you come to your boss and say, well, I told you, your boss says, did you do this? And say, yeah, I did that, and I also saw that this was going to be coming up, so I got that taken care of, and I saw this was going to come up, and he's going, wow, you're like watching for things that I'm supposed to be watching for, and so now I've got less work to do. And if you're doing that, do it. Get it done. Work that way. And then demonstrate a great attitude. Attitude is a whole lot of your job. If you're like, oh, I don't like it here. This is miserable. I got to show up on Friday afternoon. This is awful. Oh, no. Get the right attitude. Your boss will overlook a whole lot of mistakes, will overlook a whole lot of marginal quality work if you've got the best attitude in the office. Anybody ever seen the movie Rudy? Rudy's got that football player. He had the best attitude of all of them because he just so much wanted to play for the Fighting Irish. And they kept him on the team. Not that they ever put him on the field because he really wasn't that good, but they said he's got the attitude that everybody else ought to have, so they kept him on. Same kind of thing. Your boss will probably keep you on just for a good attitude, but I say do more. So then you must decide what you must have. What is so important that you're not going to give this up? So decide the non-negotiable issues for your employment. I have to have this if I'm going to work for you. And then find the better known sources who agree with you. This is why the Lone Ranger doesn't work. Go look in the rabbis. Figure out why the rabbis say you have to wear tzitzit. Why the rabbis say it has to be on the outside of the garment. Why it says that you have to do this. And why it says you have to take off this day. Why you can't sew on the Sabbath. Why whatever it is that you do, find other people who agree with you who are fairly well known. I mean, it may not be well known to your boss. It may not be well known to the guy next to you. But these are like the more famous people out there. This is the great televangelist who says this, and I agree with him. Or this is the great rabbi who says this. Rambam says this, or Rashi says that, or Rambam, or whatever. Go through and find some well-known people who agree with you. You may not have to bring these folks up, but it bolsters your case. And on the other hand, it may actually, as you look up these other guys, you find out, well, hey, Rashi and Rambam don't always agree. And maybe I actually agree with Rashi more than Rambam in this situation, because I used to think I agreed with Rashi, but Rambam made a really good case, and who knows? So search out other sources, your scriptures, of course, and then go on beyond there. Decide if it's possible to get what you want with the minimum headaches for your boss. You don't want to go in and throw this stuff on there and say, I know your entire basis of employment on me is exactly what I'm doing here. I'm throwing a wrench in the whole works. No, you want to find out a way. Not just go to your boss and say, I want this. You go to your boss and say, this is a way I can get what I want. In other words, you go to your other employees and say, hey, you want off on Sunday? I've got to work Saturday, and I really want off on Saturday. You're working it out. So if you've got everything all set up, you know, I've talked to Schmidlap over here. Schmidlap says he wants to work on Sunday. Or I've talked with this guy over here, and he says he doesn't want to work on Christmas, but I'll take Passover. If I can have Passover off, I'll take Christmas for him or whatever. Work with what resources you have and how it can work. Write it down. You're going to forget it. When you're standing in front of him and your boss is like, I can't believe it! If you have it written down, now I'm not saying read to your boss, and then I want off on the... No, he doesn't want to hear that. You're writing it down as notes to say, this is what I have to know, okay? So then, reasonable accommodations that you need for your position. You got to let me have tzitzit on. Personally, if you're working with power tools, I say don't wear tzitzit. That seems like a bad idea to me, but if you have to wear the tzitzit and you can't compromise on that one, I would say probably get a job that doesn't work with power tools. So, list the benefits of immediate work. You need to go to your boss and say, look, if I get off this day, then you actually have an easy time finding people to work Sunday because you're always arguing with people about that. You never have a problem with me working Sunday. It always works out fine. See, you got it always working together. I remember when I was at Fort Huachuca, Arizona, we had, you know, three shifts because we had a 24-hour operation. These two guys decided they were going to try, they were given this work schedule, and they said, okay, we're going to make the work schedule to happen to everybody. And they went to everybody, what do you want to work? He says, I want to work day shift. What do you want to work? I want to work evenings. What do you want to work? I want to work day. Put everybody that wants to work day shift on day shift, everybody that wanted to work evening shift on evening shift, and then these two guys got together and said, nobody wants to work nights. I know. I'll work 7 days in a row nights. You work 7 days in a row nights. We'll swap off, and then we have 7 days off in a row. And they went, oh yeah, that's great. The whole schedule worked perfectly. I got to work evenings all the time. I went to college during the day, and I went to work at night. Everything was perfect until a new supervisor came in and said, you can't do that, 7 days off. And then everything was thrown into a disarray, and I didn't get to finish my degree. So, but I did finish my degree eventually, obviously, because I'm a nuclear physicist. So find out how much it will cost How much will maximize profits and minimize cost? Is this something that will actually make it more beneficial to your boss? And it could very well be that doing these kind of things that you suggest will actually mean more money for him. It could do that. Now, I'm not talking something ethereal like, and it says in Deuteronomy chapter 28 that the Lord will bless you if you do. No. Don't go into that kind of thing. Something concrete to say, look, you know that you've got somebody working faithfully on this. You don't have to worry about this. You're not taking the effort. How is it going to make things? Hey, you can now be open on Christmas Day. Isn't that great? Hey, now you can be open on Easter. Nobody's fighting with you. Wow, the whole world's working together for you, isn't it? You get a whole other day of profits. Wow, that's great. Think the benefits that you offer to the business. The things that you are good at, what you are really bringing in, so that your boss knows this. Now, typically, this is the kind of stuff you do when you're wanting a raise. We're not talking about a raise because we're not talking about money. If you think the money, if you think your boss is providing for your family, you're greatly mistaken. God provides for your family. So your money is going to be enough. If you're, oh, for those of you who are unemployed, you go apply for a job, you want to really blow their minds, go through the entire interview, never bring up money. And if they do ask, well, aren't you going to ask about money? You say, God provides for my family. I know whatever you pay is going to be enough. That guy's going to go, get this guy signed on here. But then he also has to sell the job to you instead of you getting it sold to, you know, you, because now he wants you. And, oh, is he going to get this guy over here that demands a whole lot of money? Or is he going to get this guy here who wants a good place to work? Golly, I got to make this a great place to work. Bob over here. Bob is so friendly. He's just great to be around. You're going to have a lot of fun. He tells great jokes. Tell him a joke, Bob. You know, he's going to do everything he can. So, now, when you want to bring this before your boss, now you've gone 2 months, you're doing great, you're acting as you're supposed to, you're encouraging everybody, you're a great person to be around, everybody wants to be there, you got to choose a time. The best time is after you get a huge slew of positive reports. Things just coming in, doing the right thing. Oh, I'm still doing good. Or am I? No, yeah, I am doing good. A good time would be when you're expecting to get a raise. You might need to negotiate a smaller raise so that you can get your benefits. It would be a good time. It would be a time that you could do it early in the week before you're flooded with work so that he's not totally out of his mind. And of course, always schedule and plan for the both of you so that both of you are doing this right. Schedule. Did I say schedule? This has got to be scheduled. This can't be something that you're, hey boss, I want off on Saturday. Great, I'm out of here. He's going to forget it. You schedule it. You close the door. You sit down with him and say, this is the way I want it. This is how we're going to work together on this. Get your notes together. You got all your paperwork. So when he comes in and says this, well, what about this? What about this objection? You're not making sacrifices, are you? You know what you're going to say. What you want, how it works, why it's important, and why it's so, who says so. It might be, he says, well, who said? Well, Rambam says this, a great 16th century rabbi, you know. How it helps him. So, hints, don't argue, threaten, yell. Don't do that. Don't beg, because you're wanting the upper hand here. Don't read to your boss. And then I also want... No. Don't repeat the previous useless arguments. If you've come to him before, but I just got a hug on the day. It's Sukkot, the first day of Sukkot. If you've already made those arguments, don't repeat them. He heard you last time, honestly. I know he doesn't seem like he did, but he did. Be joyful. Go in there and say, I have so much joy in this faith that I've got, in what I've learned about Torah. And this is so great. And I so much want all of you guys to enjoy this, but I realize you're not there. It's probably not your kind of thing. That's fine. But I'm happy that this is happening to me. And I'm asking you to work with me on this because it's so much fun to take off on the Sabbath. It's so much fun to go to Sukkot at Seasons of Our Joy. And of course, don't try to convert him. Now. The point of conversion will come if you're trying to get him straight. You can, but it's not going to come right away. It's not going to come right after you've gotten your days off or anything like that. 6 months later, when he still sees you're working like a mad hound, then he goes, what's with this guy? He's whistling on the job. He's pulling everybody together. He's doing great work everywhere. What's different about you? Bam, you got it. Now you got his ear, and he will want to hear what it has. So, you might take somebody with you. It might help. I wouldn't suggest this all the time. The point is you need to get at a time set up. When you set up the appointment, say, I want to, me and Bob from accounting need to come in and talk to you. Make sure that this person does not argue, threaten, yell, or beg, because they're you. Okay? And of course, they must support what you're doing. They can't be the guy that says, what are you, so stupid that you want to take off on... No. No, they have to support you. I know this guy. He does a good job here. I'm glad I have him around. And they should be more articulate than you. I mean, if you're articulate enough, as you can probably tell, I don't have much of an issue with this, so I can't find anybody around my office that'll go in with me. Come on in with me. Dane wants this, and here's his notes. You want to see him? No, they all act like that, so... And then, of course, afterwards, follow-up. If you're given grace, work even better than before. If he gives it to you, now you have the moral imperative to continue to work like this and even better. Good boss is better than any money. You can make all the money in the world, but sorry. If you've got a good boss, that's it. If your happy employees are worth more than any money that you could pay them. And if you've received reward from your labors, don't seek more reward yet. You may later on say, hey, I want a raise if everything is still working out great. So, most important, be happy! Don't be sad! So, this is not the end. You're going to grow in your faith. There's more. You're going to learn more. You're going to grow. Think of where you came from and where you are now. What's going on in your life? What's going to continue here? Therefore, you know there's going to be something else you're going to need later. So, how much will change in the future? As you begin an inkling of the changes to come, don't jump into any change fast. Bosses don't like rapid change. Talk to them. Say, hey, you know, I've been reading I had read this great thing from Rashi just the other day, and it says that we ought to be doing this. But I haven't thought about whether I'm going to do that or not. But I'm just kind of letting you know that this is kind of mulling in my head here. So don't surprise him. So if you've been talking about this for the last 3 months in your studies, as you say, I'm going to do something different. Now you can kind of, yeah, I really have decided. This is really what I need to do. Now you can come to him later and say, hey, now I've been studying up on this and it really does make sense. And I've got all these arguments on why this is good, and so I'm going to try it. So don't quickly jump into another practice. Even in your own life, that's still not a good idea. Study, 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 study. Know what you believe before you do it. Don't just jump into something and then jump into something else. And don't adopt a practice without 2 to 3 witnesses. You know, even the scriptures say truth is established in the mouth of 2 to 3 witnesses. You find one scripture that says something, yeah, it's true, but if it's going to change your life, there's got to be something else in there that says it, because maybe you're just misunderstanding it. And oh, by the way, let me assure you, you're misunderstanding it. Because there is still something more that you're not seeing there. Find something else. Find someone else, another explanation. Search out someone else who can tell you. So, supposed to give you time for questions, and I do have time for that. Not a whole lot, but I do have time.